Live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Today, an in-depth, original, white paper investigative report. The CDC, vaccines and the deep state. This will also be posted on PRN.fm. It is fully documented, fully vetted, and fully outrageous. You'll see how the deep state works. To follow up on this later in our program, we'll be speaking with Ryan Grimm about trends leading to the intelligence agencies being beholden to no one. They are the deep state. Who is Ryan Grimm? He's the Washington, D.C. Bureau Chief for the Intercept News Network. Previously, he won a Pulitzer Prize, was nominated for another one, was the bureau chief for Huffington Post, and also has contributed on a lot of issues and won a Polk Award as well. And he worked for Politico and the Washington City Paper. So we're going to take that whole deep state on today. Also, time permitting, we're going to take a look at the abuses in psychiatry. I have stated repeatedly that there is no science behind the way that the vast majority of people are diagnosed, told that they have a chemical brain imbalance. You'll hear the words of at least 14 board-certified psychiatrists from around the world, not just here, all saying it's not true. So why is it that they continue to advertise directly to the consumer that feeling blue, you have a brain chemical imbalance? We'll address that on today's program. Also today, if time permits, I'll take calls on these issues so you'll have a chance to respond and ask questions or share your thoughts. Let's begin. What if we were to know that a cabal of corrupt bureaucrats and scientists at the heart of the CDC have known for almost two decades that vaccines, including the MMR, can lead to autism and other neurological disorders? Most people are unaware that the CDC is a militarized federal agency further influenced by private pharmaceutical interest. Now, due to the politicalization of our national immunization and vaccine programs, the true efficacy and safety of vaccines has become virtually irrelevant. The CDC's policies drive profits for itself and its partners. Now the agency is committed to have many Americans as possible mandated to be fully vaccinated as soon as possible, irrespective of how many lives are destroyed. The very mindset and disregard for human life that created the notorious Tuskegee experiment is alive and thriving in the bowels of the CDC. It is time to take a hard look at the advocates of fake science and the motivations that compel the CDC and its vaccine network to systematically mislead and lie to the public for personal benefit, power, and greed. And it's time to understand the CDC's role as a major player in the deep state. When the brilliant journalist I.F. Stone wrote, "Every government is run by liars, and nothing they say should be believed," he could just as easily have been speaking about today's pharmaceutical industry, our federal health agencies, and the many medical journals that routinely publish fraudulent fake science to keep the engines of big pharma churning. The money-driven institutions of evidence-based medicine and science, which have hijacked America's health agencies, meaning the CDC, the FDA, the U.S. Human Public Health Service, the National Institutes of Allergy and Infectious Disease, the National Institutes of Mental Health, and the USDA, have driven a stake into the heart of authentic, real scientific inquiry and knowledge and innovative progress. Its efforts to hermetically seal and silence the debate on vaccination safety and efficacy with propaganda, coercion, erroneous and deceptive research, and blatant criminality have succeeded in transforming modern vaccinology into an egregious pseudoscience that is destroying the lives of millions of children, infants, and their families. During the past 20 years, the lines dividing the pharmaceutical industry and the federal health agencies has become increasingly blurred. The revolving door between private industry and top government employees never ceases. It is always gyrating. For example, former CDC Director Julie Gerberding left government to immediately become president of Merck's vaccine division, a move that has since earned her upwards of $3 million in stock options. This may seem to be a modest reward for Gerberding's heading the agency, now irrefutably responsible for the cover-up of the CDC's own studies proving the MMR vaccine increases the risk of autism in African-American boys 36 months and younger by over 360%. Now, here's the question. Who manufactures the MMR vaccine? Behind all this? You guessed it, Merck. Robert Kennedy Jr., who we've had on this program discussing this issue, is a watchdog expert in the corporatization of the medical establishment. And he's called the CDC, quote, a cesspool of corruption. I believe he was understating it. He was referring to its culture of dishonesty and its manufacturing of junk science. Unlike the FDA, which has a contract with the American public to assure warnings about health risks and contraindications of registered drugs and medical devices, the CDC has no such contract with the nation's citizenry. It holds no ethical standard and abides by no mandated rules of law. During a recent interview, Dr. Nancy Banks, a Harvard-trained OBGYN physician and former fellow of gynecology oncology at Sloan Kettering's Cancer Center, stated to me that the CDC should be viewed as foremost an intelligence agency by whatever false propaganda means and strategy its sole purpose is to promulgate the pharmaceutical industry's agenda, and more recently this agenda has been framed as national security embedded in the deep state. One recent example, the CDC's covert activities took place in 2016. Across the mainstream media, journalists en masse denounced the documentary film Vaxxed, From Cover-Up to Catastrophe. The film recounted the events of CDC whistleblower Dr. William Thompson and his agency's intentional cover-up and destruction of documents of scientific evidence proving the MMR vaccine caused autism. Rather than denouncing the nation's vaccine agenda, the film uncovered massive corruption in the CDC's vaccine division. But a program with the intention of disseminating false information was taken up by the media, and as a result, they demonized the film, which including outlets such as ABC, CNN, MSNBC, and The Guardian, The Washington Post, The New York Times, Forbes, Rolling Stone, and many others. The media's blitzkrieg occurred before the film's actual release. To my knowledge, none of the journalists had watched it. None knew the underlying story and the line ends aside from what could be gleaned from a 3-minute trailer. Our investigative article, Why is the CDC Petrified of the Film Vaxxed?, uncovered a template for an editorial script upon which all of these reviews were based. They originated from a single source, and the tracks led to the halls of the CDC. The CDC's partnership and fellowship programs with the Association of Healthcare Journalists is nothing less than an intelligence indoctrination program to train journalists to be the mouthpieces of the CDC's fake science. The curriculum held at the CDC's Atlanta campus includes propaganda in federal health policies, epidemiology, no authentic gold standard biological science, pandemic flu preparedness, vaccine safety, and autism. Instead, journalists are instructed how to access CDC publications and databases and to pursue federal resources and public relations kits that come frequently from the pharmaceutical industry, and that becomes their science. So let us recap here. The CDC, unbeknownst to the entire public, has its own campus where it instructs through propaganda what is considered legitimate to write upon, research, or review. And that comes from Big Pharma and the CDC, which is influenced by Big Pharma. Vaccine policy and development of promotion of the childhood vaccine schedule is only one of the CDC's many corporate tasks. More broadly, it is not exclusively concerned with the physical and mental health of the nation. It is also engaged in the design and development of biological weapons and threats of bioterrorism. And because vaccines are biological drugs that can be weaponized, they fall under the CDC's purview and jurisdiction. Consequently, the center works closely with the Department of Defense and the intelligence agencies. They work with the National Security Agency, with whom there is the exchange of data collection and sharing of classified information. In its April 21, 2000 MMWR report entitled Biological and Chemical Terrorism Strategies, Plan for Preparedness and Response, the CDC reports that, quote, for the first time, the CDC has joined with law enforcement, intelligence, and defense agencies in addition to traditional CDC partners to address the national security threat. Would they consider, for example, those who opposed mandatory vaccines as a national security threat? Those who attack daily, hourly, by the minute, anyone, everyone, no matter what your qualifications, background, or truth, you are attacked by trolls and those for hire, by pharmaceutical industry and vaccine makers and the CDC to discredit and destroy the reputations. We now know, thanks to WikiLeaks, that the FBI and the CIA and Homeland Security and the National Security Agency considers any American, no matter their age or background or their truths, if you engage in any demonstration over the internet or in person against any government policy or corporate interest, you're no more than a local domestic terrorist. As a result, everything from Occupy Wall Street, which is extremely passive, became infiltrated. In fact, leaked memos show that the FBI actually had assassins, sharpshooters on roofs with the order to shoot if it was given. Why didn't this become a news feature on the New York Times, an outrage? But it wasn't. Something is amiss. Something that is both perplexing and troubling. For those of us who are baby boomers or old enough to have engaged in social disobedience and social challenges to the corporate and the government interest and the Vietnam War and the secret war in Cambodia and Laos and other campaigns, Nicaragua, we supported wholeheartedly the left, the liberal community, when the Pentagon Papers, Daniel Ellsberg's leaked papers, were published by the New York Times. We supported Bernstein's and Woodward's expose of Watergate, published in the Washington Post. We supported it. When Senator Church had hearings and the CIA director and others in intelligence agencies and the FBI were shown to have been complicit in engaging in illegal surveillance at a domestic level and engaging in terrible acts, we supported it. Today, The left is protecting the intelligence agencies. They do not want memos to come out. Let everything come out. We can argue about its accuracies, like this new memo. Look at the memo. Be critical. Be concerned. Make sure that every single word in that memo, when it finally comes out today or tomorrow or the next day, can be verified as accurate. But at least allow the American consumers to make that determination, not a group of self-serving technocrats and deep state operatives. That is also true with the CDC. If they work on our interests, why cannot we see their documentation? Why do they keep it from Congress? Why do they lie before Congress, as we can prove that they have done about the safety of vaccines, lied? Why is everything so opaque? Where is the transparency? It simply does not exist. And that is unfortunate. But there may be a turning point when the Center for Disease Control morphed now into a pseudo-intelligence agency within the deep state and adapted its inquisitional task of population surveillance and information data collection as a matter of intelligence gathering instead of improving health care. During the past years, this has further grown into spying and covert operations against the critics of our national health and immunization policies, and immunization, and as described by the CDC's website, is now a matter of national and global security. Therefore, no longer are vaccines simply a medical intervention that concerns public health in a field of healthcare that can and should be reevaluated on sound, independent scientific principles. In fact, immunization has been unfortunately removed from science altogether, and consequently can only rely upon flawed and unreliable research to support its policies. And these policies are left for the politicians to debate, which is rarely done and is no longer open for discussion among expert medical researchers outside of the walls of the CDC and outside the walls of Big Pharma, away from the network of trolls and shills and medical puppets for hire, spewing disinformation into the public sector. Do you really believe anyone on any topic on CNN or MSNBC or any of these other stations, including Fox? I don't, because I've found that they are either completely biased, which therefore means that whatever they're sharing, I cannot have complete faith in. Remember, there's a difference between a fact and the truth. You can have a lot of facts. It does not mean your facts are true. So this alone is sufficient incentive for targeting and silencing voices challenging vaccine safety and efficacy who demand a reevaluation of vaccine on all of its policy and, most importantly, its toxic ingredients. In addition, the CDC's activities are no longer limited to the United States domestic health. After 9/11, its mission expanded far beyond its original mandate, and today the agency is globally engaged. On the center's website, it defines itself as America's global health protection agency, in charge of implementing global health security, and it works in partnership with other nations. And since 2006, the CDC claims it has trained over 115,000 professional personnel in its version and interpretation of health issues. Its global rapid response team has over 400 experts that they can deploy in as little as 48 hours to respond to local and regional health emergencies. So in brief, the CDC is immersed in the technology of surveillance, information gathering and analysis, and these are among the defining characteristics of any intelligence agency. Now, there are intelligence activities often employed by the deep state and now undertaken by the CDC include pressuring peer-reviewed medical journals to retract studies that challenge their ideology or endanger the agency's reputation. In 2014, Professor Brian Hooker, a biochemist at Simpson University, reevaluated the CDC's own data showing a 350% increase in autism among African-American boys receiving the MMR vaccine. Initially approved for publication by the journal translational neurodegeneration, the study was shortly thereafter suspended after the CDC pressured the journal with fabricated claims against Dr. Hooker. I interviewed Dr. Hooker at length, and he was just appalled at the fact that his article, meticulously documented, was retracted merely because they said that he had joined the board of an autism foundation. That is correct, but that was after the journal had accepted and had reviewed his article for peer review. It had nothing in the world to do with the article. And the fact that someone was on a board as a volunteer because his own son has autism should not disqualify anyone. This is a textbook case of intelligent sabotage of a critic by false accusation. And have you noticed today that all you have to do is make an accusation against someone without due process, without evidence that should be given in a court of law, and that person is found guilty? That is how far we've gone. And that is unfortunate. Similar to the Pentagon and the CIA and the CDC has also infiltrated Hollywood, hidden within the quarters on the University of Southern California campus, is the relatively unknown organization called Hollywood Health and Society. Now, you've never heard of this group. We found it. Its top funders are, you guessed it, the CDC, the National Cancer Institute, the Office of National Drug Control Policy. And who is the largest private funder of vaccines? The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Now, the small organization's mission is to provide, quote, briefings and consultations with experts, case examples, panel discussions on timely health issues for Hollywood scriptwriters and producers. Among the main topics listed on its website are influenza, smallpox, and autism, all critical, if the truth came out, of the official positions, but all official propaganda stamped with the CDC's ideological seal of approval, which means that when you see a television program or a movie or, let's say, a play, anything involving writing, there's a high probability that the deep state has been spoon-feeding its side of a story. I remember the other night watching a film, Black Hawk Down. It was a well-produced film. It was interesting. But for those of us who actually study history, and especially history of political influences in around the world, it was filled with flaws. But you could not have had that film produced, nor a lot of the other films produced about war, without having the Pentagon, the Defense Department, and the CIA's input. They make sure the script sticks to the official version. And this is true in all of the media today. So when someone goes on television and says, you know, these people who are against vaccines, these are nut jobs, these are quacks, these are people who are a danger to society. And the host has no background, more often than not, in science, certainly not public health science. And they'll kind of nod their head, yeah, that's unfortunate. So get your damn vaccines. That's an actual quote from one of these people. Yes. And so everyone kind of nods their heads. Yeah, get your vaccines. What about the 2 million parents who did exactly that and today are living with children with full-blown autism spectrum disorder? And what about the millions more of children without full-spectrum autism but with some type of learning disability, delayed learning, physical tics, compromised immune systems? Think of all the people who have lined up with full trust and confidence in the media and the doctors in the media, not realizing it was all a very controlled propaganda effort. Who speaks for them? Who takes responsibility for the damages they are now living with? Among the trove of classified national security documents released by the National Security Agency whistleblower Edward Snowden were several regarding the government's intelligence agency's infiltration of the Internet in order to manipulate information and deceive the public and destroy personal reputations of all opponents, including independent journalists. Among the documents was a manual entitled The Art of Deception, Training for Online Covert Operations, end quote. Could you imagine that? But it exists. So who do you know? Who do you trust? Who do you believe? And one of its stated missions is to flood the Internet with false information and data to attack, to malign, to libel, to slander, in effect to destroy the reputation of its opponents. Furthermore, the manual provides instructions on taking control of online public discourse in order to generate allegiances to the intelligence agency's false points of view. Vaccine opponents often complain about the blogosphere being riddled with anonymous trolls, most of whom would be unable to debate their way out of a cardboard box on scientific issues regarding vaccines, but who nevertheless follow an intelligence manual's strategies to disparage vaccine critics. Bill Gates, who is on record condemning parents who refused to vaccinate and who is no stranger to the higher echelon of executives in the vaccine industry and department heads of at the CDC and funded psychological professor Seth and others at universities to develop a monitoring system to track all anti-vaccine internet traffic. And given Gates's utter disdain towards voices speaking out against vaccines, we can be certain this was not for humanitarian research purposes, but as part of the intelligence gathering in the CDC's war against the health of the nation. Others who have been mouthpieces of the deep state, yet are viewed as respectable and medically credentialed kingpins, include people such as Paul Offit, and others are welcomed by the media as the foremost authorities and final voices on vaccine topics. To our peril, federal agencies take full advantage of the average American scientific literacy. An important survey conducted by Michigan State University found that only 4% of American adults had an understanding about stem cells. 7% could not read nor understand the science section of the New York Times. An earlier study funded by the U.S. National Science Foundation noted that about half of Americans understood that the Earth rotates once around the sun annually. 45% of the people had an acceptable understanding of DNA, and only 22% knew what a molecule was. Although scientific illiteracy is an enormous threat to a functioning democracy and an informed public, nevertheless, it is a boon for the CDC and the vaccine industry, manipulating this ignorance with a heavy dose of fear tactics, such as revealed through the CDC's press model to guide the mainstream media's role in increasing vaccine compliance, health officials have managed to successfully thwart many efforts to educate the public to evaluate the pros and cons of vaccination. Among the corporations of Washington's three branches of government, and the emergence of a surveillance state watching over the shoulders of every citizen, the politicalization of medicine, particularly vaccines, is another sign of the further decay of the nation towards totalitarianism. Perhaps no one has politicized vaccines more than Dr. Paul Offit, the leading acolyte of extremist medical intervention in the CDC's national security strategy. For almost two decades, fake news and bureaucratic deception, anger and hatred and disproportional distrust has taken the spotlight as the nation's health further erodes. Annually, the quality of America's health is declining, and this is most evident in the younger generations who have received the bulk of vaccines. And while the CDC and its allies conjure distorted statistics with no sound science basis from thin air in order to convince us that vaccines have saved countless lives. In fact, these screeds are no more scientifically reliable than visiting the local gypsy soothsayer to have your palm read. A doctorate in science or a medical degree from Harvard does not excuse a person from duplicity and chicanery. The good news is that the tide is slowly turning. The populace is steadily losing its faith in government, and that's a good thing. Autism rates continue to rise, and parents are able to access extensive independent medical literature and research to understand the real danger of vaccines and why their child may have become autistic. A fundamental reason why parents increasingly refuse to vaccinate themselves and their children is quite simply the cartel of pharmaceutical-friendly bureaucrats writing the nation's health care policies has been losing the public trust. There's no secret why federal health officials and their absolutist claims to mandate vaccine compliance are untrustworthy. In 2016, over 1,500 medical researchers surveyed by the prestigious journal Nature failed to reproduce another scientist's experimental results. Over half were unable to reproduce their own experiments. The article concludes that the potential reasons for this lack of scientific confirmation are numerous. However, most important is that no single scientific study or paper can claim to be the final word on any medical issue. And this is especially true with vaccine research. The complexities of the human immune system, its biomolecular mechanisms, and epigenetic relationships with external environmental factors are not fully understood. And there remains much more to discover and digest. Modern immunology still has a long way to go and needs frequent revision as new discoveries emerge. In contrast, vaccine science continues to rely partially upon an antiquated understanding of the body's immune system, focused almost exclusively on antibody generation. One example of medical negligence has been the rising epidemic of citizens who are immunocompromised, and therefore must understand that they are susceptible to adverse vaccine reactions. When a severe condition of immunosuppression is clearly diagnosed, it is not uncommon for physicians to withhold vaccinations. But how many Americans are immunocompromised? When this question was posed to a researcher at Johns Hopkins University, to his surprise, Theo Schall discovered there were no population accurate statistics and none of our federal health agency or medical institutions were tracking it. Not only are these people at higher risk for vaccine injury, they are also at higher risk of infection from wild viruses. Federal vaccine policies do not differentiate the population with weakened immune systems from healthier individuals. The CDC's immunization schedule is one-size-fits-all paradigm. That's the bottom line. Everyone should and must be vaccinated. That's their policy. So of all the millions of people who get vaccinated each year for the flu vaccine or any others, how many have been tested first to see how compromised is their immune system? Are you taking chemotherapy? Are you taking nonsteroidal anti-inflammatories? Do you have some form of autoimmune condition like lupus? There are dozens of autoimmune conditions. I'm not aware that any pharmacist, nurse, or physician asks any of these questions, let alone does the test before giving vaccinations. After reviewing the different immunocompromised populations or weakened immunity due to age in the senior population and malnutrition and cancer patients and people with AIDS and HIV infection and transplant recipients and patients under immunosuppressive drugs with autoimmune conditions and primary genetic immunodeficiency disorders, Schall estimated there were approximately 122.6 million Americans with a weakened immune system who stand at higher risk for infection. 122.6 million Americans. Our reevaluation of the available figures at the end of 2017 placed the figure at 130.4 million. Over one-third of the entire population of the United States. Wow. The question whether 130 million people, including hundreds of thousands of children, should be subject to injections with infectious viruses, meaning live, attenuated, or killed, is never discussed. Volumes of medical and biochemical research confirming the severe vaccine ingredients are also ignored. Nor is any consideration given to the number of vaccines administered and the risks due to the accumulative levels of toxic ingredients when multiple vaccines given simultaneously or within short time intervals. Nor do pediatricians routinely evaluate the state of children's immunocompromised systems before determining whether or not to administer vaccines. There is no profit from delaying or postponing vaccination. No perks are received from insurance companies for increasing vaccination compliance. And finally, physicians and pediatricians are largely as ignorant as the general public about scientific evidence supporting and debunking vaccine safety and efficacy myths. Their primary source of information is channeled through, you guessed it, the CDC. Our federal health agencies have yet to conduct or fund definitive and legitimate studies that are needed to determine once and for all individuals' vaccine safety and whether or not vaccines are exogenous factors are contributing to the onslaught of illnesses and ravaging the country. And yes, such gold standard studies, which remain absent from the pro-vaccine arsenal, would be costly, but that would be the price to pay to bring sanity to the irrational conclusions of the CDC's decision makers on our nation's vaccine advisory committees. Nevertheless, the cumulative financial cost of all previous government-sponsored fake science would be a small price to pay for the future well-being of children. Already we have millions of damaged children, millions, and their parents say, my child was normal to all those vaccines. And during congressional hearings into the causes for the unacceptable rise in autism in the United States, CDC officials confirmed no studies have been undertaken to compare the quality of health between vaccinated and unvaccinated children. Yet the subcommittee was assured by the CDC that such studies would be conducted, well, a decade later, when the CDC was again yanked back into the subcommittee, still no studies had been conducted, yet they had wasted 10 years. Congress was assured that such studies were forthcoming. In the last 5 years, they've been brought back no studies. So we should not hold our breaths. The officials inside the CDC and the heads of the departments, the Health and Human Services, know perfectly well that vaccinated children are susceptible to far more illnesses and weakened immune systems than their unvaccinated peers. Their greatest fear is that thorough long-term studies of a placebo group not getting any vaccines at all versus another one getting all the vaccines to determine the outcome that you would end up with those being healthier who did not take the vaccines. Otherwise, the necessary research to prove the health advantages of vaccines would have been conducted ages ago. Yet there are reasons why such studies are not mandated nor funded. Health agencies are fully aware that vaccines are a scourge. Instead, they pump out ecological and epidemiological cohort studies notorious for subjective manipulation, confounders, and biases to support their dogma. Such studies, little more than mathematical equations, are not accurate. Shifting and fudging data, deleting data, this creates scientifically invalid a medical dogma. Nevertheless, epidemiological studies remain the most cited articles by the most vocal proponents of vaccine and vaccine mandates. The extremist wing of the pro-vaccine community, headed by Dr. Poff at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, have been diligently pursuing mandatory vaccination and encouraging states to repeal personal, religious, and philosophical exemptions from vaccination, although medical exemption is acknowledged, advocating efficient screening of infants and children to determine whether or not they are at higher potential for injury from vaccine is never voiced. This radical contingent who speaks on behalf of vaccines go as far as to suggest fines and imprisonment of parents who refuse to vaccinate their children. They support local child services kidnapping unvaccinated children from homes and ushering them through courts into the nation's deplorable foster care system. The writings of Hannah Arendt over 50 years ago about the origins of totalitarian ideologies in states have never been more poignant or prophetic than today. She worried deeply about the language of absolutism, and particularly in the realm of science, which is now the underlying mission of the CDC and the likes of Paul Offit and others, seeking to politicize immunization. The attempt to reduce all of human life to well-defined processes, to predictable patterns in primitive linear reductionism, was, in Arendt's view, both self-defeating and extremely dangerous for a healthy society. In a totalitarian state, objectivity is tyrannical. Scientific objectivity that threatens the official policy even more so. In the case of vaccines, the entire industry is a creed that has institutionalized a denial of the most fundamental principles of science and fact-finding. Offit himself is often periodic lecturer at the American Legislative Exchange Council, ALEC, conferences organized by the Koch brothers for the purpose of privatizing all of our government health care, education, and human life itself. His years of efforts to turn vaccine science into a political issue have succeeded. And worse, the CDC's ongoing war of terror against the unvaccinated becomes lawful. And this is what gives rise to a totalitarian culture of science. I'm Gary Noll. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. We're now going down to Washington, D.C. We're standing by as Ryan Grimm, and I gave you his background, his biographical information a little earlier in the program, so let's say hello to Ryan. Nice to have you with us today, Ryan.
Thanks for having me.
Ryan, recently there was language included in a spending bill that went through Congress that would limit Congress's ability to oversee surveillance operations by federal intelligence agencies and would remove Congress from overseeing covert actions. I assume this is for both domestic and international purposes. And also the CIA and other intelligence agencies could spend money however they pleased. So would you update us about these provisions and what is the ultimate motive of the GOP supporters, and certainly of Trump and his CIA director, Mike Pompeo? What could they be doing with this power now?
Well, we don't know exactly yet what they're doing with it. Hold on one second. It may be a huge turf war going on between the various committees on Capitol Hill, where the appropriations committees –
are trying to seize some of the authority to oversee or interact with intelligence communities and take it away from the Intelligence Committee, which is kind of built to do that. It has many more cleared staffers. It has years of experience in kind of overseeing and regulating the intelligence agencies. And the thinking is here that the appropriators do not. And so if you could shift your boss over to be the appropriators, then you effectively have carte blanche to do whatever you want.
Legally, what is the Congress's ultimate responsibility for oversight of our intelligence agencies, particularly on budgetary matters and how the CIA and the NSA and other agencies spend money? And is this not pushing forward an agenda where someone could end up with no checks and balances on how the government should be accountable, or any agency of the government, including intelligence, should be accountable for anything?
Right. The way it works is that Congress has two different mechanisms where they oversee it. They appropriate money. If they don't appropriate money, then the intelligence agencies have to find it elsewhere. And that's essentially what you saw with the Iran-Contra affair. It was the intelligence agencies going out and finding their own sources of cash. And in fact, the CIA has set up businesses, around the world. Some of those have a dual purpose of making money for the agency as well as serving as front groups, so that so operatives can work overseas. But that's the first check that the Congress has. And the second check is that they have to authorize and approve all of the programs, including the covert programs that the agencies undertake. And that is done through the Intelligence Committee. And the agencies are then required to report back in a classified setting what they're up to with that authority and with that money. And so this language waives the responsibility to inform the Intelligence Committee.
Eric Prince, the founder and CEO of Blackwater, is now back in Washington, and the mainstream media seems to have completely forgotten his sordid past. However, he's courting the Trump administration to launch a private independent intelligence or mercenary army that would only be beholden to the White House. In effect, the president would have his own private army, theoretically could. Can you remind this audience of Prince's past and the corruption of Blackwater, and what is he actually proposing to Trump, at least to the degree you may know?
Right. He is the brother of Betsy DeVos, and a child of an Amway fortune, as a matter of fact. And he used that fortune to create a kind of mercenary operation that used to be called Blackwater, which is, made up mostly of, military veterans who then become private contractors after a series of scandals and massacres. He changed the name of the organization and shifted its focus to working much more with China and with the United Arab Emirates. Now with the Trump administration, he has been dipping his toes back in the American waters, and he proposed that he could effectively take over the entire occupation of Afghanistan with private contractors. And then as we reported recently, he was proposing a kind of a separate clandestine private intelligence force that would report directly to Pompeo and to Donald Trump.
That's extremely dangerous.
Yes, that is safe to say.
Especially considering his background and what Blackwater did. In fact, that was one of the basis for Chelsea Manning becoming a whistleblower, because we wouldn't have known of until those tapes were leaked, of how they were joking about killing all those people who were not terrorists, and then they lied about it. Final thought, what concerns you most about what is happening now with our intelligence agencies and the fact that they're rarely, if ever, held accountable for their misdeeds?
Right. So the pattern here is that the intelligence agencies have been operating with what seems to be a pretty free hand in general over the decades. But all agencies, even the intelligence agencies, they want as much flexibility as they can possibly get. And so this seems to be a moment where they're reaching for a little bit extra flexibility. Now, we'll watch closely to see if on February 8th, when the new spending bill is enacted, whether the language changes.
Okay. By the way, good luck with your book, This Is Your Country on Drugs, The Secret History of Getting High in America. And the website is The Intercept, and my guest, Ryan Grimm. Ryan, thank you for coming on today.
Thank you.
And now we're going to go directly to that clip. I want you to hear this. All the voices you're going to hear are board-certified psychiatrists dealing with the idea that you've got a brain chemical imbalance. Please listen.
Psychiatry in all of this time doesn't have one case report of one disease validated, not one. What they do is they meet at the American Psychiatric Association, they meet in the DSM committee, Diagnostic Statistical Manual Committee, and they vote on making new behavioral and emotional disorders, and they vote, and then they start immediately calling them diseases. And they tell people, they tell the public, these are diseases. Total fraud. Total fraud.
The actual truth about chemical balance is that it's an actual lie. Nobody has yet measured, demonstrated, or created a test to show that somebody has a chemical imbalance in their brain. Period.
What the American public should be thinking about is when they or their loved ones or their friends have received a psychiatric diagnosis, they should be asking the doc, geez, doc, where's the chemical test for that? Where is the objective test for this? And I guarantee you that they'll be told, we don't have a chemical test for that.
There are no biological tests for any mental illnesses that I'm aware of.
There are not current available tests to verify your diagnosis.
There is no test. There is no specific test to differentiate between, let's say, schizophrenia and bipolar disorder. Not a single test.
Yeah, we have not really confirmatory test for the diagnosis.
There is no test, there's no biopsy you can do that says this person is depressed, this person is bipolar.
We don't have anything really currently to identify mental illness per se.
No, there are no specific tests to confirm the diagnosis or show the improvement, like any blood tests or any x-rays or anything like that.
Oh, in my practice, I don't do any tests. I just speak with people and listen to them, and then I make a decision in what kind of illness there should be.
We don't really have any specific blood tests or other tests that are definitive for any mental illness whatsoever.
What kind of biological tests do we have available today for detecting mental illnesses?
None.
There is no rational science behind what they think is the cause of these symptoms. The medications that are being given to people are, without exception, introducing chemicals that are altering the brain in ways which can be very damaging. And I'll go a step further and say that in the absence of a proven chemical imbalance for which the medications are, quote, rebalancing or fixing, the medications are in fact toxic.
Then the next question is how many patients have been able to cure? And here are all these psychiatrists from around the world going to a national conference. None. They all say none. What do you think about an industry that is getting about $80 billion in drugs into people's body with false diagnosis that is mythical and then not curing anyone and they're still given legitimacy? No, this I'm challenging. In fact, what I'm doing is I'm now recruiting citizen journalists from around the world who can work from their own home about 5 hours a week, who are highly literate, who can understand how to read journals, how to read articles, how to know what's important in that, And each one's working on something different, starting with easy ones. Then if they do that well, then going to more intense ones. We have some really powerful investigations we're working on, and these can help with fact-checking, et cetera, so that when we launch an effort to tell the truth about something like psychiatry and the drugging of our children, then we will have citizen journalists being able to do reports and articles and internet postings based on real science with qualified factual information, just like you just heard. So it's one thing for those who protect the pharmaceutical industry. So, it's a great science. And then you find the truth. And I found the truth by going out and interviewing people, interviewing psychiatrists, studying more than 3,000 scientific articles. There's not a single article in the world that shows that psychiatry and its pharmaceutical model is accurate. That means it's all based upon supposition and is therefore fraudulent. So that needs to be exposed, but there's a lot of different topics we're going to be exposing. If you'd like to join us as being citizen journalists, it's a whole new movement, and we're going to have people on the air. Every week we're going to have a little 10-15 minute segment about what is new and uncovered with facts and documentation. Everything we do will be represented by high level of scholarship and factual notes. Then go to prnstudio@gmail.com. prnstudio@gmail.com. Thank you all for listening. Look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day.
Your touch has thrilled me like the rush of the wind.